This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. The Trump administration recently announced rule changes for how the Endangered Species Act is implemented. Species categorized as threatened will no longer receive the same protections as species in the endangered category. The government will now consider economic factors before declaring a species as endangered or threatened, and how risks to species in the, quote, foreseeable future are defined as being loosened, which conservationists say could overlook the effects of climate change on species survival. And while most people probably think of animals when they think of endangered species, on today's show we're going to talk about the world's endangered plants and efforts to protect them. Joining me now to learn about the role the Naples Botanical Garden plays in this global effort is Chad Washburn. He's Vice President of Conservation at Naples Botanical Garden. Chad Washburn, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Mike.
We are not taking calls, but we do invite you to engage with the show and your fellow listeners on social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So this might sound like an obvious question, but in preparing for this show, I realized I don't really know exactly what a botanical garden is. If somebody asked me to define it, I would be like, a place where you go to look at plants.
Yeah.
But that's more than that. Can we start there?
Yeah, absolutely. Much more than that. And that's a great question. And that's a question we get a lot in the public garden world. I highly encourage you to look at some of the plants and the tags that go with them. So like in a museum, a painting would have a plaque with information telling about that painting. We have tags that tie back to a number in a database. And we can tell everything about that plant from where it originated, who that plant exchanged hands through, if it came from another botanical garden, if it was wild collected, how endangered or threatened it is.
That very plant.
Yeah, that very plant. Yeah, we take very detailed records and we share plants with other botanical gardens. And it's really important as we talk about conservation, where that plant came from. But was it something that someone cultivated in a nursery, or was it something that's wild collected?
Yeah. So there's a lot of science going on is what you're saying.
Absolutely. There's a lot of – when you walk into a botanical garden, you're surrounded by immediate beauty, but you're also surrounded by lots of data that goes into the collection and curation of those plants.
What is the primary mission of the Naples Botanical Garden? Does it have a main mission?
Yes. Our mission is to conserve plant species as part of our main mission, but then also it's really important – to not only conserve them, but to display them and offer them as an educational tool for the public. So when you come, you're likely to see some beautiful plants, but you're also likely to encounter some of our docents who will or signs and that will explain a little bit more about some of the plants. Maybe it's rare or it's used for something in particular, explaining more about the plants.
Hmm. We just recently did a segment on this show about the Florida Aquarium for the first time ever inducing Atlantic corals to spawn in the lab. The goal is then to grow them up big enough that they can then propagate them back into the wild. Is there an analogy in the world of botanical gardens? Do you guys do that too?
Absolutely. So much of we do is focused around that. We have about 6,000, just in our botanical garden alone, we have about 6,000 different species of plants. And some of those are for display. 500 of those plants are considered endangered or rare, either in the U.S. or Florida or globally. And those are the ones that we really focus on projects for conservation, whether it be in our garden or another botanical garden. Or growing those things for outplanting into an ecosystem to supplement a population.
So you do send out little plants to other places in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. We have
FedEx them or something.
Honestly, yeah, they're FedExed. We have a great plant, Magnolia rajaniana. It's a species from Southeast Asia, and we knew it was something special. It's this beautiful, incredibly intense, fragrant magnolia tree. It's about 4 years old, and we just thought it was another magnolia, and we knew that it was considered to be threatened. But when we started looking into some of the data on this plant, we held the only accession in a botanical garden in the world.
Wow.
And realized that, you know, there's incredible value to this plant. So one of the first things that we did was as soon as it flowered, we collected fruits from the tree this year and we shipped them to a couple other botanical gardens around the world. FedEx.
So the Trump administration recently announced some rule changes that are going to change the way, I think the way to put it is, the way critical habitat is designated around endangered species. So that's why we're talking to you, because people think of mammals, they think of birds, they think of fish, but then plants are endangered species too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Quite often we think of feathers, fins, and fur when we think of endangered species, but you know, it's really rare. Actually, I'm preparing for today. Several of the media stories that I looked up ignored plants altogether. I was really shocked to see that. But we know that quite often people don't think of plants as something that's endangered.
So biodiversity, well, what's your best pitch for somebody who – because, you know, there's people who think, oh, why are we not doing this because of that one little thing living there? What's your best pitch against that argument?
Biodiversity, the more diverse our ecosystems are, the more resilient they are. Having so many different species, there's correlations between species richness and soil carbon storage. There's correlations with improved climate regulation, increased nutrient uptake, increased biomass production. When we're facing something like now, we have a potential hurricane off of our coast. Having increased diversity, increased biodiversity, makes our ecosystems more resilient. If we only had two or three species in an ecosystem, they could very easily be wiped out by one invasive exotic pest. Those added layers of diversity help add resiliency to our ecosystems.
What are the main threats to our local plant species?
We face things like development of some of our natural areas, but climate change and some of the factors associated with climate change really are offer some of the greatest threats. We're seeing increased frequency and intensity of storms. Like over the past couple of years, we've had Hurricanes Irma, Maria, Michael came through. Increased average temperatures. Every month, it seems like there's a new report that month has set a new record for average temperature for that month. And that's going on continuously. Alterations to hydrology. There's a lot of conversations going on around replumbing of the Everglades and restoration of ecosystems. Those changes to hydrology, they have significant impacts to our ecosystems, especially here in South Florida, where just a couple of inches can really define the plant community. So if something becomes drier, quite often we'll have increased frequency and intensity of wildfires. Those changes really impact plant diversity. One of the things that I'm incredibly concerned with, and as a botanical garden we're concerned with, is climate change resulting in increased invasive species. And that's not just plant species, but it's increases in exotic pests that impact our forest. A good example of that, swamp bay, was a dominant tree in some of our wetland areas. You could go to pretty much any forested wetland in South Florida. And
Swamp bay.
Yes. And it was a dominant tree. But we had an invasive pest come through, and it's nearly wiped out all of them on our landscape. So these increases in exotic pests are a significant threat to plants.
And I guess when it comes to something like climate change, you know, animals can migrate, plants can't migrate, and especially if we've kind of broken up the ecosystems. You know, maybe in the past, you know, before us, they could.
Yeah.
But now that we've built roads and whatnot, that's not really a thing possibly anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Animals can move. Like you said, plants, that's a challenge. They move, but on a much slower scale. Seeds have to be dispersed. So that's an added challenge to conservation of species.
Absolutely. What would be considered one of the most imperiled species here in Southwest Florida of the native species?
Oh, man, there are several. I can think of there's a cactus that's native to the Florida Keys. It's the semaphore prickly pear cactus. It's known from two locations, and its habitats are really fragmented. It's threatened by two invasive exotic pests, and as sea level rise, it's inundating the roots. So that plant is really just on the edge of surviving. It's really on the edge of extinction. And botanical gardens, we have examples of that plant in our garden, and I know that it's in other gardens. So we're kind of the last hope for that species.
You have it in the, yes. It's at the Naples Botanical
Garden.
Yeah, we have
it at Naples Botanical Garden.
If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Chad Washburn. He's Vice President of Conservation at Naples Botanical Garden. We're discussing the garden's work in trying to preserve species of plants here in Southwest Florida and plants from all around the world. This conversation is pre-taped, so we're not taking calls, but you can add your thoughts via social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, you manage different habitats there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You manage different Southwest Florida habitats, but then do you also have little habitats that are representative of different parts of the world? It's been a long time since I've been there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So we have in some of our formal gardens, we've got a Brazilian garden, Caribbean, Southeast Asian, a Florida garden, in addition to our 90 acres of natural areas with several native habitats.
Are you primarily interested in native species, or is it just anything that will grow here and it's endangered?
Our focus is species that are tropical or subtropical. That's where we really excel. Those are plants that we can grow more easily. If we were to try and take something from a northern climate and grow it here, it would take a lot more input to care for that. So we really specialize in plants from the tropical regions. But because there's so much diversity here in Southwest Florida and we face so many challenges, we do grow quite a few native plants. And we also have some great connections and overlap with our flora between us and the Caribbean and Central America. So really, from a conservation perspective, we work globally, but you can only do so much. There's so much that needs to be done. So we really have a focus on South Florida and Caribbean and Central America.
This might be kind of a strange question, but you are a public attraction that people come to. That is how you make most of your money, probably.
Yeah.
Are where plants are how and where plants are exhibited chosen based on how attractive they are? You know what I mean? Like you want it to be a pleasing experience walking through the garden. Is that part of the equation in setting up a garden like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a part of the botanical garden for about 13 years. So I've been there since before we opened. And in working with the landscape architects and our horticulture team to design the gardens, it was really about showcasing, we wanted to do something different. We didn't want to just be, an attractive botanical garden. We wanted to include some of those really rare species in the displays. So as you walk through, it's not just, something that's attractive. Right next to it, you may have something that a palm tree that has, 20 of them left in the wild. And I can think of examples in the garden.
So it may not be just its visual attractiveness, but sort of its rarity or the story behind it is compelling,
absolutely.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, and a good way to look at it is, it's kind of a garden of stories. As you walk through, there's some incredible stories that go along with each of the plants. So,
do you experience a sense of loss if some of these plants die? If you can track the provenance of a plant all the way back to its beginnings, and it's one of the last ones on the planet, you kind of get attached to them, I would suppose.
Absolutely. I have to say that one of the most challenging days of my entire career was the first day back from the hurricane, from when Irma hit, to walk through the garden and really didn't do any recovery. We walked through and just kind of took everything in. And part of it was just kind of understanding what happened, but part of it was triage. And, when we triage like that, we look at those things that are special and what can we save. But, yeah, it really is truly a personal thing. And it's not just us that work there. We heard from visitors after the storm, and whenever a plant is lost, visitors come in and you'll have somebody say, oh, that was my favorite tree. I really miss seeing that tree. Plants are more, and they have value, both conservation value, but as humans, we really connect to them. I think people come to a garden because it's a place to it's an enjoyable place to go. They really are a part of our quality of life.
I've read the conservation strategy document that that you guys sent over, and it talked about stormwater management strategies. Can you talk about where that fits in? Because obviously that's a big deal. I did an interview this morning about the Blue-Green Algae Task Force, and that's one of the things that's on their list. So talk a little bit about that and how it fits into the garden's work.
Yeah. So our conservation strategy is traditional things like collecting and conserving plants in the garden. Some of that strategy is managing plants in the wild in our natural areas and some of our natural partnerships with natural areas around South Florida and the Caribbean. But it's also efforts for restoration and resiliency in our community. And stormwater is one of those opportunities to use plants and the functions that they provide to us, you know, clean air, clean water. Our wetland ecosystems, they clean water. So we use native plants throughout the garden in a number of unique ways. The main access, the main viewshed across the garden is called the River of Grass. It's a miniature Everglades. And if you walk through our River of Grass, you'll see species that are native to the Everglades. And it's not just something that's attractive. All of our stormwater from the site goes through that River of Grass.
It's functional.
It's functional. And that stormwater goes out to our lakes. If you look at our lakes, they're planted with literal plants from the edge of the water into the water and all the way up, really that transitional area. We plant those with native plants, and they help to remove nutrients. They help to hold the soil. They really are a significant part of our water management practices at the garden.
Is there a public policy advocacy aspect to what you're doing in terms of trying to convince policymakers to do things like plant thoughtfully in order to reduce nutrient loads and things like that?
Yeah. As a botanical garden, part of our mission is education. And it's really awesome to have. We have 250,000 people a year come through the doors of the botanical garden. That's a really incredible thing. But to have that opportunity to reach out and impact that many people, I think it's less through public policy, but more through that education, education of our citizens. Big question right now is, what can I do? People want to have an impact. They want to do something to help prevent red tide and these algal blooms, the blue-green algal blooms. And one of the things that they can do is advocate in their own community. If we can educate our citizens, they can advocate for stormwater ponds that don't have turf right down to the edge. They can advocate for planting native plants around the edges of their ponds so that they can better clean stormwater. There's 4,200 stormwater ponds in Collier County, and then you can imagine if a significant percentage of those planted those as ecosystems with native plants, we could have a significant impact on water quality in our region.
I read that you guys have a presence in Latin America and the Caribbean. What's that all about?
Yeah. A couple years ago, several of our staff members went to a conference in Panama of the Caribbean and Central American Botanical Gardens. Every other year, all of the gardens in that region get together and we share ideas and help develop strategies for plant conservation. And we took a team down to Panama for this conference, and we realized in our conversations with everybody in the room, we have so much in common with all of the gardens of our region. Much of our flora overlaps. A lot of the Caribbean islands, we have, we're dealing with similar soil types. If we have an invasive species here in South Florida, it's likely to impact Central America or the Caribbean. It's either coming from there or it's coming from Florida to there. So realizing that we have so much in common, especially after the hurricanes have been hitting our region, we've all kind of banded together, all of the gardens in the region. So we're not only working towards similar conservation goals, we're helping each other out. We developed relationships at that conference. And soon after, Hurricane Irma and Maria hit Puerto Rico. First thing we did, even though we had been hit by a hurricane, as soon as we recovered, we jumped on an airplane. We shipped chainsaws down, shipped down as much equipment as we could. And we went to the Arboretum in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and helped them to recover. That developed into a relationship there. And now we have an agreement with the Arboretum that will work together to conserve plants. Because of that, we've been sharing plants back and forth so that if they're hit by a hurricane again, we have plants in our garden that are backed up. We can share with them. We know their provenance. We're doing the same. We're sharing plants with them and sharing information. So we also have a relationship with gardens in Cuba. I have been to Cuba, I think, 6 times over the past year and a half, developing relationships with a garden in Havana. And we're working on an urban forestry project with them there to identify plant species for urban forest projects. So really, we're all working together for conservation in our region.
You mentioned earlier, I think you said you've been there 13 years. So since the beginning, is it really only 13 or so years old? I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, it's a really a brand new garden. There's only so many years you can say that. I've been saying that for so many years. But I guess
I would say 13 is still brand new for something like that.
Absolutely. And it's been really fun because we've had opportunities to there are gardens around the world that are hundreds of, 250 years old. Those gardens are kind of they've been doing things. They're established and doing things a certain way. It's been fun to build a botanical garden that we can do things a little bit different. We're reaching out to partners. We're not just saving a rare plant on a mountain somewhere far away. We're conserving plants in our own backyard, and we're really looking to functions of plants. How can we make impacts on things like red tide and blue-green algae? So it's been a really fun ride.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, just thank you for the opportunity to be here. And I really highly encourage anyone who hasn't been to the garden to come visit us. It's any time of year is a great time to come. There's always something in bloom.
All right. That is all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to thank my guest, Chad Washburn, is Vice President of Conservation at Naples Botanical Garden. Chad, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Mike.
We're going to end today's show at the Centers for the Arts in Bonita Springs, which has a brand new exhibition called Small Wonders, Insects in Focus, that puts some of the Earth's tiniest creatures on display. The exhibit opens today at the center's location on Old 41 Road. WGCU's Andrea Perdomo takes us along for a sneak peek of the exhibit that will remain open to the public until October 19th.
Oh, wow, magnification.
56 times, yeah. So
that's one big bug.
Yes. From the moment I enter the exhibition room, I am surrounded by super high-definition photos of bugs. Thankfully, they line the walls of the room in enormous frames, many of them taller than me, and I'm 5'6". The Centers for the Arts exhibition's director, Aaron Gearhard, says the artist, Bob Sober, wanted to give visitors a unique perspective on some of the world's smallest inhabitants.
And what Bob is doing with these insects by making them larger than life, filling up 8 feet tall panels here so that we can get up close and personal and feel the textures and hairs and things like that and sort of feel like what it would be if we were the same size.
The bugs are displayed on crisp white backgrounds. The photos are taken above the insects and the perspective gives the observer a scientific vantage point. Each photo is magnified dozens of times, so every hair and texture is clearly visible.
The variety is very far-ranging. So you've got everything from bugs that look like they have shoulder pads and helmets on and wide wingspans with intricate patterns to big, burly beetles with giant shells over their backs with a lot of intense patterning. Some things that look like brain scans over here, this blue one, this iridescent tones and bright green and orange. It's almost unreal.
The images are of insects from all over the world. Gearhart says the exhibit provides an opportunity to expose the beauty of these creatures while also teaching the important role they play in the environment.
Introduce people to things that may make them uncomfortable, that may challenge them in certain ways, that they don't want to squish it when it's on the wall. So we have to understand that, okay, we can capture this and this has a unique benefit to its ecosystem and our planet. So to help foster that appreciation, I think that's really nice.
Gearhard also says the exhibit can spark intrigue in visitors of all ages.
And that's what's unique about this exhibit for adults as well as children. Children can just be overwhelmed by the sheer size of it, and adults can remember those times when they had that spark of exploration and surprise and beauty of nature.
The Centers for the Arts Bonita Springs will host a family activity day with the exhibition that will include bug bingo, art projects, and educational tours. Gearhart says they hope people who visit will leave feeling a little less squeamish around bugs.
Hopefully, overall, when people walk away, we can have an appreciation the next time we see something on the wall, we can take a closer look.
Without our shoe in our hands.
Small Wonders, Insects in Focus is free to the public and will be in town until October 19th. For WGCU's Gulf Coast Live, I'm Andrea Perdomo.
The Centers for the Arts Bonita Springs will host a bug-themed family activity day this Saturday, September 7th from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. Again, that's at its old 41 Road location. You can find pictures and video from the exhibit online at wgcunews.org. That's all the time we have for today's show. Thanks to our earlier guest, Chad Washburn, Vice President of Conservation at Naples Botanical Garden. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear all of our episodes in their entirety on our website, gulfcoastlive.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by Andrea Perdomo and myself. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thank you for listening. I'm Mike Kinnairy. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.